Hi, and welcome to Show Tunes with Kate Botello from Interlochen Public Radio. Coming up, stressful school days, some dance-tastic 50s, and Broadway Disney style. At intermission, our friend Matt Williford talks some techie turkey and shares a backstage war story from Brigadoon. Lights are coming down in our virtual house, so please turn off all cell phones and refrain from flash photography. It's distracting to the actors, and you're only going to get a picture of your radio anyway. Tonight's overture and finale emerge from the Scottish mists for one day every 200 years, and for about 1,000 revivals in between. From our vinyl vault, here's the overture and opening sequence to Brigadoon. Overture and opening to Lerner and Lowe's perpetual favorite, Brigadoon, materializing from the mists in 1947. Up next, the grinding ABCs of school, an alphabet of angst, a burdensome book report, and a critical epiphany. Here are three numbers from Matilda the Musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and Spring Awakening.
Mom says I'm an angel.
Say you think you're able.
It's the trench ball speciality.
My mummy says I'm a miracle. Ah!
My daddy said I would be the teacher's pet.
Ah! School is really fun, according to my mum. Ah! Dad said it's the alphabet.
The alphabet? Oh, you gotta learn to listen, kid.
Three to go.
The name of the book about which this book report is about is Peter Rabbit, which is about this rabbit. I found it very... I liked the part where it was a... It reminded me of Robin Hood. And the part where Little John jumped from the rock to the sheriff of Nottingham's back. And then Robin and everyone swarmed from the trees in a sudden surprise attack. And they captured the sheriff and all of his goods, and they carried him back to their camp in the woods. And the sheriff was guest at the dinner, and all but he wriggled away, and he sounded a call, and his men rushed in, and the arrows flew. Peter Rabbit did sort of that kind of thing too.
The other people's name was McGregor. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Oh!
In examining a work such as Peter Rabbit, it is important that the superficial characteristics of its deceptively simple plot should not be allowed to blind the reader to the more substantial fabric of its deeper motivations. In this report, I plan to discuss the sociological implications of family pressure so great as to drive an otherwise moral rabbit to perform acts of thievery which he consciously knew were against the law. I also hope to explore the personality of Mr. McGregor in his conflicting roles as farmer and humanitarian. Peter Rabbit is established from the start as a benevolent
hero.
If
I start writing now when I'm not really rested, it could upset my thinking, which is no good at all. I'll get a fresh start tomorrow, and it's not due till Wednesday, so I'll have all of Tuesday unless something should happen. Why does this always happen? I should be outside playing, getting fresh air and sunshine. I work best under pressure, and there'll be lots of pressure if I wait till tomorrow. I should start writing now, but if I start writing now when I'm not really rested, it could upset my thinking, which is no good at all.
The name of the rabbit is Peter. 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, yes!
Down came the staff on his head, smash! And Robin fell like a sack full of lead, crash! The sheriff laughed and he left him for dead. Ha! But he was wrong.
35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40.
Just then an arrow flew in. Woo! It was a sign for the fight to begin. Zing! And then it looked like the sheriff would win. Ah, but not for long. Away they ran. Just like rabbits who run a lot. As you can tell from the story of Peter Rabbit, which this report is about.
Rabbits, 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 chasing rabbits.
How do they expect us to write a book report of inequality in just 2 days?
Mention the extreme pressure exerted on him by his deeply rooted rivalry with Fluffy, Muffy, and Cottontail. On Peter Rabbit.
Just a rabbit.
Tatus et alto, we superum, saevi memorem, unonis,
all that's known in history and science, overthrown at school, at home by blind men. You doubt them, and soon they bark and hound you, till everything you say is just another bad about you. All they say is trust in what is written. Wars are made, and somehow that is wisdom. Thought is suspect, and money is their idol. And nothing is okay unless it's scripted in their Bible. But I know there's so much more to find just in looking through myself and not at them. There's a way through this. On I go to wonder and to learning. Name the stars and know they're dark returning. I'm calling to know the world's true yearning. The hunger that a child feels for everything they're shown. You watch me, just watch me. I'm calling.
Jonathan Groff's Melchior realizes there's more to learning than what you can find in books, from Stephen Sader and Duncan Sheik's 2006 Spring Awakening. Before that, Charlie Brown and friends enter a fugue state working on the book report. Our recording was from the 1997 revival of Clark Gesner's You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And we started out our ABCs of school stress with the darkly funny school song from Matilda the Musical by Tim Minchin, which opened on Broadway in 2013. Okay, well, if all that school stuff has you stressed out, better just dance it off. Here are a couple of big Latin-inspired dance numbers from the 1950s. Lola and other doomed souls pull some punishing moves in Damn Yankees, and Ruth tries to trade information for conga lessons in Wonderful Town.
Who's got the pain when they do the mumbo? Who's got the pain when they go erp? Who's got the pain when they do the mumbo? I don't know who. Do you? Who needs a pill when they do the mumbo? Who needs a pill when they go erp? Who needs a pill when they do the mumbo? I don't know who. Do you? Someone must be sick with the heat or stepping on everyone's feet. But if everyone's feeling okay, why don't they just say ole when the music carries them away? Who's got the pain when they do the mumbo? Who's got the pain when they go erp? Who's got the pain when they do the mumbo? I don't know who. Do you? For there is an element of doubt as to
who's got the pain when they do the mumbo? Who's got the pain when they go erp? Who needs a pill when they do the mumbo? Who needs a pill when they go erp?
Then will you give me my interview?
See.
Oh, well, it's easy. All you gotta do is this, see? One, two, three, ha! One, two, three, ha! Like that, see?
Conga!
Three, ha! That's it. You got it. Okay, fellas, that's enough. What do you think of the USA, NRA, TVA? What do you think of our Mother's Day? What do you think of our...
Conga!
Yeah, that's it. That's the conga, all right. Okay, fellas, settle down. What do you think of our native squaws? Charles D. Dawes, Warden Laws. What's your opinion of Santa Claus? What do you think of our...
Conga!
Warren, come here. Wait a second, I want to talk. Come here, fellas. Good neighbors, good neighbors, remember our policy. Good neighbors, I'll help you if you'll just help
me. Conga!
What's your opinion of Harold Teen, Mitzi Green, Dizzy Dean? Who do you love on the silver screen? What do you think of our...
Conga!
What do you think of our rhythm bands, monkey glands, hot dog stands? What do you think of Stokowski's hands? What do you think of our...
Conga!
What's your opinion of women's clothes, Major Bows, Steinbeck's Bros? How do you feel about Broadway Rose? What do you think of our...
Conga!
Settle down! What do you think of are rocks and rills, mother sills, seasick pills. How do you think about Helen Wills? What do you think about good neighbors, good neighbors, remember our policy. Good neighbors, I'll help you if you'll just help me. Double malts, family vaults, Epsom salt. How would you guys like to learn to waltz? Now you just want to go.
Wouldn't you guys like to learn to waltz? Nah, you just want a conga. Rosalind Russell accidentally turned a newspaper interview into a riot in Conga from Leonard Bernstein's 1958 Wonderful Town. Before that, Gwen Verdon and Eddie Phillips did the Mambo in Hell in Jerry Ross and Richard Adler's 1955 Damn Yankees. Lights are dimming now in our virtual lobby, so it's time for intermission, where you can stop and ponder the fact that there are actual people responsible for the dimming of set lights. Yes, we are talking about the technicians, the folks who make sure actors you're enjoying aren't performing on an empty stage in the dark. Meet our friend Matt Williford. He's here to talk some tech turkey and give us a war story about a production he worked on. First, the rules.
We often tell you stories about actors, but there's a whole entire important group of people in the theater that have their own versions of stories and their own set of rules. So Matt here is a techie. He's a technical director.
Yes. So I was the technical director at the Croswell Opera House in Adrian, Michigan from November of 1997 to August of 2000. And in that almost 3 years, I built and teched 34 shows, either produced by the Croswell Opera House or in conjunction with our local school district, Opera Lenawee, and some others. So boy, do I have some stories.
Can't wait.
So the first thing is there are written and unwritten rules of the theater, but mostly I'm going to share the unwritten rules for techies. So rule number one is, during rehearsal process, when we're still building the set and you're at rehearsal, don't ever ask a techie, is that what it's going to look like? I don't know how many times I had actors come on, we're still carving pink foam to make it look like a stone bridge or fireplace. No, we're going to leave it pink. Trust me. So that's number one. Number two is, what's set on headset stays on headset.
Now elaborate on that, please.
Well, so we all are familiar with what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So this is the similar thing for theater technicians. So your light board operator, your sound operator, your stage manager, probably your follow spot operators, maybe anyone else that you need to have on headset will be mic'd up. And a lot of times when you're sitting through a lot of dress rehearsals, long dress rehearsals, redoing numbers ad infinitum, you're going to know a lot of the tunes to the musicals, but you're also probably going to come up with alternative lyrics. Or you might actually have a little under your breath commentary during the live show. So what happens on headset stays on headset. And the last one is, especially because this was a community theater that I worked at, and we had to utilize, like many other community theaters, volunteers, especially for backstage. So the thing is, don't ever come to the stage manager and say, when do we go out for a curtain call? It happened. So I had to teach these people the following rule. In a high school production, it's not uncommon to see all the students come out at the end in their black shirts and jeans and they take a curtain call. I used to tell our folks, look, if the audience sees us or hears us, there better be a problem on stage. And when the local reviewer in the paper never mentions the scenery, lighting, audio support, I count that as a perfect review for the tech staff. So as long as they don't know we're there, that was a clean show.
That's awesome. What a good point, right? You've done it right if we're not saying, what a cool light cue.
Yeah, if you draw attention to the scenery or the lighting or something like that, then probably the show isn't that good.
And now, the war story.
So at the Croswell Opera House, we had the benefit of a 45-foot-wide proscenium arch and a 25-foot-deep stage with a full fly loft. So for Brigadoon, we used multiple scrims, cutout drops, and then some dead-hung scenery like tree trunks, that sort of thing, that would layer the forced perspective in. And in Act 2, as Act 2 starts, we have the chase scene. If you're familiar with Brigadoon, we have the chase, and it's sort of dark and ominous, and it's through the forest. Well, as soon as you finish that chase scene, then we had to go to an N1 cross, which means we drop the front black drape, and they play it downstage on the apron while we make a scene change behind the drape. So we had actors on stage, standing in tableau, and here comes the drape. And meanwhile, we call the fly cue to bring in these other tree trunks, which are now quarter-inch plywood on 1x4 framing. So they're pretty heavy, and they're dead hung.
And dead hung means?
They're just suspended by a wire or something to the pipe. So they're going to come in full weight.
Okay.
All right? So you put spike marks on the floor so that actors and other technicians know exactly where that thing is going to place when it comes in. Well, we had one of our stalwart community actors by the name of Jerry, and I'll leave out his last name to protect his anonymity. Jerry was standing right on the spike mark from one of these tree trunks, and we're in dress rehearsal. And we bring the tree trunk in about 3/4 of the way, but stop because Jerry's still standing there in a blue out. And meanwhile, the pit orchestra is vamping, and the director from the house is saying, "What's taking so long?" And everything stops. So we have to explain, look, Jerry's still standing on the tape spike mark, and we couldn't fly this in because it's not safe. We're going to crush his skull. And the director says to me, "Well, hit him. He'll only do it once."
Really?
Yeah.
So in short, don't be Jerry.
Don't be Jerry. And if you're stuck on stage in a blue out, don't be standing on a spike mark.
That seems to be pretty good standard information we all need.
It's another technical rule of theater.
Okay. So if you're looking down and you see a little X where you're standing, you might want to step to the left or to the right a little bit.
Pretty much.
So remember, insofar as spike marks are concerned, don't be Jerry. The little X's are there for a reason. And now, presuming the cast survived the set changes, here's a number from Act 2 of Brigadoon, My Mother's Wedding Day.
Wedding day went just a wee amiss, then I will tell you about a wedding far more daft than this. The lad involved turned out to be no other but my pa, and by the strangest bit of luck, the woman was my ma. MacGregor, McKenna, McCowan, McCraw, McBerry, McNeil and McRae, aye, all of the folk in the village were there on my mother's wedding day. For Pa had asked his friend McPhee, and Mac had come with May McGee, and May invited 93 to my mother's wedding day. Then up the road came Ed McKean with half the town of Aberdeen.
Aye, everyone was on the scene at my mother's wedding day.
Quarter to five, everybody was there, a-waiting around in the room. McVicar, McDougal, McDuff, and McCoy, everybody but the groom. And as the hours turtled by, the men got feeling kinda dry, and thought they'd take a nip awry while a-waiting for the groom. And while the men were dipping in, the lady started on the gin.
And soon the room began to spin at my mother's wedding day.
Then all of a sudden the liquor was gone, the gin and the whiskey and all. And all of a sudden the wedding affair had become a bonny brawl. For Pete McGraw and Joe McPhee began to fight for May McGee, while May McGee and Sam McKee were a-wooing in the the hall. So cold and stiff was John McVeigh, they used him for a servant tray.
For everyone was blind as gay at her father's wedding day.
Macduff and McBiddy were playing a game and using McCoy for the ball. McKenna was eating the bridal bouquet and McNeil hung on the wall. Then finally my father came, his eyes were red, his nose aflame. He didn't even know his name, he was drunkest of them all. The people were lying all over the room, a-looking as if they were dead. Then Mother uncovered the minister quick, and she told him, go ahead. Then Pa kneeled down on Bill McRae, and Mother kneeled on Jock McVeigh. The preacher stood on John McVeigh, and that's how my Ma was wed. Until today, the folks declare, it was a mess beyond compare.
It never was a day so rare as a father's wedding day.
Susan Johnson's Meg Brockie told the story of a disastrous wedding in Brigadoon. That recording was on original vinyl. Lights are flickering now in our virtual lobby, so it's time to thank Matt and the rest of the light flickerers and get back to the house for Act Two. We're about to hear two powerhouse duets for women, some of the biggest voices to boom from the stage. From Miss Saigon, Two Women Love the Same Man in I Still Believe. And after that, the Hilton sisters, Daisy and Violet, are joined in body, but with two distinct hearts in Sideshow. Each wonders, who will love me as I am?
Last night I watched him sleeping, my body pressed to him. And then he started speaking the name I heard him speak was Kim. Yes, I know that this was years ago, but when moonlight fills my room, I know you are here still. You sleeping once more, the nightmare came. I heard you cry out something, a word that sounded like a name, and it hurts me more than I can bear, knowing part of you I'll never share. Never know, but still.
My heart forever.
like a fish plucked from the ocean, tossed into a foreign stream. Always knew that I was different, often fled into a dream. I ignored the raging currents, right against the tide I swam. But I floated with the question, who will love me? Exotic creature on display inside a zoo, hearing children asking questions makes me ask some questions too. Could we bend the laws of nature? Could a lion love a lamb? Who could see beyond this surface? Who will love me as I am? Flowers or a telegram? Who could proudly stand beside me? Who will love me as I am? Like a clown whose tears cause laughter, trapped inside the center ring. Even seeing smiling faces, I am lonely pondering.
Skinner and Alice Ripley as Daisy and Violet Hilton were the only two women ever co-nominated for the Best Actress Tony in Who Will Love Me As I Am from Henry Krieger and Bill Russell's 1997 Sideshow. Before that, Leah Salonga's Kim and Claire Moore's Ellen played the modern counterparts to characters in Madame Butterfly with I Still Believe, from Claude Michel Schoenberg and Alain Boublil's 1990 London cast recording of Miss Saigon. And for the record, I just gotta say, no matter how sympathetic they try to make him, I always think the man they have in common, Pinkerton, or in this case, Chris, is a real creep. And now, a couple of the biggest smashes running on Broadway right now have their own man in common. In this case, it's Walt Disney. Disney movies turned to musicals consistently sell out Broadway houses. Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, and Mary Poppins are just three examples. Here's a number from Aladdin, which opened last year, and one from The Lion King, which has been selling out houses since 1997.
Attention, I pray. Oh, ye people of Agrabah, this is your lucky day. Hail, high and low, great and small, lucky people of Agrabah, someone's coming to call.
Take it away, Babcock.
Someone who tamed the Cyclops, then fought 40 thieves single-hand.
He's richer than Croesus.
He goes where he pleases.
And this time he's chosen your land. Oh, ho, ho, yo, land. Oh, come on.
Nobody's coming.
So here he is now with his band.
Make way for Prince Ali. Say hey, 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 for Prince Ali. Say hey.
Hey, clear. Are you gonna love this guy?
Big way,
big way,
big way,
big way.
Prince Ali, fabulous he, Ali Ababa.
Genuflect, show some respect down on one knee. Now try your best to stay calm. Brush up your Sunday salam.
Then come and meet his spectacular coterie.
You, it's a world-class menagerie.
Wow, Prince Ali, wonderful he, Ali Ababa.
He's a satyr parade for you to see.
He's a satyr parade, so get on out in the street. Got someone I want you to meet.
No question, this Ali's impressive. Though his entourage might be excessive, all those elephants at once can quite unnerve one. Still, the guy gives a parade new meaning, and the sight of all those peacocks preening, he's a prince without a peer, and we deserve one.
Prince Ali,
there's no question, this Ali's alluring.
Never ordinary,
never boring.
Everything about the man.
About to put my heart asunder,
and I absolutely love the way he
dresses.
He's got 95 white Persian monkeys, and to view them he charges no fee.
He's a soldier,
he's got slaves, he's got servants and monkeys. They bow to his whim.
Prince Ali
and Ali.
kings, when numbies beware.
I've never seen a king of beasts with quite so little hair.
I'm gonna be the main event, like no king was before. I'm rushing up, I'm looking down, I'm working on my roar.
Thus far, a rather uninspiring thing.
Oh, I just can't wait to be king. And no more say do this.
Now when I say
no
that,
say be
there.
No more say stop what.
Don't you know real?
No more say see here.
No, don't see here.
Free to run around all day.
That's definitely out.
Free to do it all my way.
And I arranged a heart to heart.
Kings are needed by some little poor misbuster.
If this is where the monarchy is headed, count me out. Out of service, out of Africa, I wouldn't hang about. This child is getting wildly out of way.
Oh, why does King wait to be king?
Irby Raniar's young Simba just couldn't wait to be king in that number by Elton John and Tim Rice from The Lion King. And James Monroe Iglehart and the cast of Aladdin presented the fictional Prince Ali, written by Alan Menken, Howard Ashman, Tim Rice, and Chad Begelin. It's time now for our 11 o'clock number, which is often a soaring song. In this case, though, it's more of an oaring song, if you like terrible puns, that is. Now, what it is not is a boring song. From our vinyl recording of Guys and Dolls, here's Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat.
I dreamed last night I got on the boat to heaven, and by some chance I had brought my dice along. And there I stood, and I hollered, someone fade me. But the passengers, they knew right from wrong. For the people all said, sit down, you're rocking a boat. People all said, sit down, you're rocking a boat. And the devil will drag you under by the sharp lapel of your checkered coat. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking a boat. I sailed away on that little boat to heaven, and by some chance found a bottle in my fist. And there I stood nicely passing out the whiskey, but the passengers were bound to resist. For the people all said, beware, you're on a heavenly trip. People all said, beware, beware, you scuttle a ship. And the devil will drag you under by the fancy tie round your wicked throat. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking a boat. And as I laughed at those passengers to heaven, a great big wave came and washed me overboard. And as I sank and I hollered, someone save me, that's the moment I woke up, thank the Lord. And I said to myself, myself, sit down. Sit down, you're rocking a boat. Said to myself, sit down. Sit down, you're rocking a boat. And the devil will drag you under with a soul so heavy you'd never float. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking a boat. Sit down, you're rocking, sit down, sit down, sit down, you're rocking the boat.
Stubby K's Nicely Nicely and the cast of Frank Lesser's Guys and Dolls sang Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat. We'll end the show tonight with the same show that brought us our overture and intermission. Here's the finale to Brigadoon on the original vinyl. Curtain falls, the crowd goes wild, and we come to the end of another episode of Show Tunes with Kate Botello, c'est moi. Michael Culler engineered the show. Sally Isley is our executive producer. Many thanks to Matt Williford for filling us in on the unwritten tech rules and the war story from Brigadoon. Remember, whatever happens on headset stays on headset. We'd love to hear your musical theater war story. Send us an email or call our comment line at 231-276-4444. This is Interlochen Public Radio. See you in the aisles.